This episode of Football 301, Matt Harmon joins me for 100 minutes, a Pixar length recap show of Wildcard Weekend, 5/6 of Wildcard Weekend. Very fun group of games. We react to all of it, starting with Sunday Night Football, Chargers, Patriots, and we go from there. Super fun show with Matt. See you guys in a sec. Hello, welcome back to Football 301. I'm your host, Nate Tice. We are live reacting to a delightful Wild Card Weekend. I'm joined this Sunday because it's like the perfect, perfect little spot in your schedule. It seems like Matt Harmon, a very busy schedule, but Matt Harmon is here to join me to recap a very, very fun 5/6 of the Wild Card Weekend. How you doing, Matt? How was today? How was Saturday? How was everything?
Oh my God, it was great. I had a blast. These playoff games were awesome. It was fantastic. So I'm really excited to break these games down. There's a ton to talk about. Not only do I love talking about like what actually happened in the games, one of the things I do every year, I write an article that I obviously have not started yet, and I will do completely tomorrow when it is due, is kind of reacting to the fallout for the playoff losers. So that's kind of become my shtick here at Yahoo the last, I would say, probably 3 to 4 years. I like talking about that as well.
Oh, I love that. Hopefully you get some like rough draft takes out tonight, and then you're like,
exactly,
oh, yeah, that's, you kind of marinate on it. You have your, is Sunday sleepy time tea night for you, or is that just weeknights?
I actually don't do sleepy time tea anymore. I partake in something else that I'm not going to name drop here. So yeah, okay. I've been level headed and ready to rock all day. No sleepy time anything. But yes, it is past my sleepy time tea. That is for sure.
I usually when we're podcasting together, I'm having my second dosage of PEDs, as I like to call it, which is a double shot of espresso. But that was a couple hours ago. But still feeling good after what was a great weekend. Yeah, the last game, which we'll get into, was a little bit of a rock fight, but still fun to talk about. But quick business before we get into those five games. The NFL regular season is over, but the NBA is in full swing. If you haven't subscribed already, go to the Yahoo NBA channel on YouTube. It's the new channel with all of our friends here at Yahoo covering the NBA. We got KOC, the Kevin O'Connor Show, the Dunker Spot, Nikias, the Big Number. Subscribe over at youtube.com/YahooNBA. It's a great time to do that. We got playoffs, and then it just All-Star game hits, and then it really feels like NBA season. But preempt that. Big Wolves win, by the way, came right at halftime between Chargers, Patriots, timed it up right when they finished this big comeback. So that was also delightful for at least Nate Tice. But let's recap these five games. Usually we do three highs, three lows, but this is nice. This is just five games. Let's talk about them. I like that you say that you have kind of something on the losers, which I always think is interesting to talk about too, kind of juice up the thoughts as we enter free agency and draft season, the real silly season as it appears right now. But that last game of this weekend, we have a Monday night game tomorrow, Texans Steelers, but Patriots win 16-3. Man, the quarterbacks got hit a lot this game. They got hit throwing the ball. It was like a Dr. Seuss story. They got hit throwing the ball. They got hit scrambling the ball every time, like one fish, two fish, three fish, black and blue fish. That is Justin Herbert and Drake May tonight. But they played the winner of that Texans Steelers game. But Matt, what'd you think of this game? I thought Drake May used his legs, had to be very kind of almost safe and underneath. Patriots defense, I thought, had a great game plan. But Matt, what'd you think about this game with the Patriots coming out ahead?
Yeah, I think that's a great call out. I thought the Patriots defense had a really good game plan here. And it was one of those where, and I've honestly felt this way about the Chargers, I would say, for probably the last month, is that you can't tell too much during the game. And anyone who's sitting here saying like, oh, nobody's open and they're not watching, they're not at the stadium in the middle of the game is totally fibbing, or they're just making it up, or they're doing a best guess estimation here. But it feels like Herbert either doesn't trust what's in front of him, or nobody is open on the back end. And I think that probably goes to, hey, the Patriots knew what was coming from this offense, which I think you can do at this point with the Greg Roman led operation there in Los Angeles. We've talked about this, I think, at different points during the year, but I think that Greg Roman and this offense can be pretty good when everything is going right. It can be like NFL acceptable. It's not absolutely atrocious, but when the offensive line line has deteriorated to this point, just conceptually what they're doing on the back end, they don't provide a lot of advantages for the quarterback or for the receiver or for the receiving core. And at this point, I just think it's withered to a point where a defense like New England that can put together these pretty good game plans can completely blot them up on the back end. So I thought that was definitely a big key to New England winning this game. And also on offense, Drake May's legs, and shout out Ramondre Stevenson. You know, I made the joke, which most people did not get, on social media, like, yeah, second round rookie running back Ramondre Stevenson making plays late in the season, just like you want when you're, this is when you want your explosive young players to be stepping up. And they really did kind of just say, hey, we're gonna have some issues with the physicality at the edge positions with the Los Angeles Chargers. Like, Tui Pelotu and Khalil Mack will beat you up, and that's really just not the Patriots game at tackle, really, to protect in that way or to get the perimeter on the runs that they have at times there. So they're just like, hey, we're going to run right at him with Ramondre Stevenson, and he played pretty well in that regard.
He did, yeah. I know that there's kind of like baseball jokes about like platoons, like, you know, having like a lefty-righty hitters, and it's kind of like just combine the names, and it's kind of like Ramondre Henderson is a hell of a player. You know, like that's a fantastic player if you just combine those two, right? No, but not only does Stevenson run the ball, I think that's a great point, but checkdowns. I thought the Patriots, I want to tip of the cap, is kind of, yes, they took, there's a few sacks taken by the Patriots offense. There was a few strip sacks even by the Patriots offense. I thought Will Campbell had some rust. Owe is like the exact matchup that might give him issues unless he can maybe shifts positions, which I think he could. Long-armed, athletic, bendy types. Usually give a lot of guys issues, but I think that he kind of wrapped around May, was trying to kind of double clutch some stuff and then like actually get rid of the ball. And, you know, he doesn't have the biggest hands, so that ball can pop out. So I did think that there was just some of those kind of things that happened, but I think also the check down stuff and also just the protection stuff, what the Chargers want to do, sometimes they're not always blitzing, but they're sending those creepered and simulated pressures, which I'll group together, which is where they're rushing four, but one of those four is like a off-ball linebacker or a DB and dropping someone from the line of scrimmage. But still, you're dropping seven into coverage and you're hoping to occupy the running back. So it just becomes a math game. It is that you have four eligibles out on routes, gets seven in coverage. And the Chargers will play a lot of like kind of bracket coverage. It's not exactly bracket, but more matchy, where they have two or four eyeballs on one player or two players sometimes. The first third down of the game, you kind of see that breaking down. But how you beat that is scrambles, and which has gotten Jesse Minter defenses in the past. And if the back gets out, not a lot of eyeballs are on him initially. They're betting, they're hedging. Hey, you're not going to get the back out, so we don't have to really look at him for about three or four Mississippis. But if the quarterback is kind of like, okay, or Stevenson did a great job, the old line did a great job going to the right direction, and not the back wasn't occupied. And you felt like these little checkdowns were going for big plays for the Patriots, kind of like, that's really all they had going for a little bit. And then Drake May, the scrambling, like you kind of felt that as well, or not just felt that, but just saw that throughout the game. And I think those were just the successful plays for this team. I mean, there were still the turnovers for the Patriots. You know, he had the batted ball, Tier Tart, All Football 301 member. Great weekend for the All Football 301 team.
Yes.
I couldn't stop tagging you. I was getting obnoxious with this.
Dude, I think we got to raise our win total. Whatever we were talking about, you know, hey, this could maybe be a frisky, we win the NFC South type of division. Yeah. Hey, I don't know. I think we could upset. So with the performance by some of our guys this weekend, I think we could upset somebody in the first round of the playoffs.
I think so too. It was great for Parker Washington, Tier Tart. Even Mac Jones had a great drip on before going into the game. So that was just, you know, another aspect of all football. He was flashed
two on the sideline once. So, I mean, he made an appearance.
He did. He's a great backup quarterback. He's got great vibes with it. I think that's one good aspect with him, which I think is a big thing some of these coaches want. Mm-hmm. I did think you mentioned this about the Greg Roman operation, that I thought the Patriots defense, they were just teeing off every time they blitzed. And Herbert went 7-16 against the blitz for 69 yards and three sacks, pressured nine times. Every time it was silent count, silent cadence. And every time they did the bob, they would shift, unload their disguise. Like kind of just get into their final spots, whether it's blitzing or not blitzing. And I thought that's what just discombobulated them over and over. And it was like, change up the snap, double bob. Like, do something, like, do it, like a finger, like a hand down, and instead of the step. And it's just one of those things that just seems to always crop up with the Greg Roman offense. And I feel like we've been, you and I have talked about this many of times. Mm-hmm. You just feel it again.
Yeah, it big moments like this too. It's like anything, stunts, blitzes, especially yes, a defense. It, like, yeah, they could not pick up stunts to save their lives. And it's like this. Yeah. I get it. This is it's a personnel problem on that offensive line. 100%. I 100% recognize that. I even think at times the offensive line, you know, the bar is just in hell for this unit. So it's kind of easy to say, well, maybe they exceeded expectations. And I saw some of that talk kind of cropping up during the game, but to me, it's just such a problematic unit. And then on top of that, you don't have any sort of schematic advantages. That's when you really start to feel like, oh God, you know, are any wide receivers even eligible in this game? I mean, you know, Ladd McConkey is basically invisible throughout the game. And at times too, it's like when they'd get open guys downfield, because you could see this, like when the ball arrived, the players are open, because Herbert has to bail out of the pocket or feels he needs to bail out of the pocket. That ball is not even it's a catchable play, but it's not. It's not an easy catch. It's made harder. Or like, are you hunting, you know, DPIs with some of these throws down the field? So it was just a really rough watch. I this sounds so mean, but I texted one of the producers on the fantasy podcast about this during the game. I said, this Chargers offense right now, it just feels like a sick dog that, you know, it's time. Like let's just put it out of its misery. It's time to go. This team at this point, this is a team I was really excited about in the first month of the season.
I know.
It's just so far beyond gone that from Chiefs that operation. Like, oh, it feels Brazil like 100 years feels ago.
So long ago. It does. It really does though. Like, I remember how excited we were. It was like, man, they're just chucking it to the receivers. Like they're just dropping back and chucking it. It was like that. Yeah, it just feels like a mirage in the desert. It really does. And I think it's just so, I mean, maybe John Harbaugh brings back Roman. Maybe they just pass him around like hot potatoes until like it gets cool again. It's like, hey, this new fan base has no idea what they're about to do. So we could buy it 2 years until we find a guy that we actually like. Maybe that's what happens, but it's just frustrating. It's like they're very like it's hard to describe. It's an offense that I recognize. There are some bones to it that I recognize from my college days at Wisconsin and stuff. There's some overlap there. Paul Chris, the OC I had at Wisconsin, his brother, Jeep Chris, worked for Harbaugh and the staff. So there was some overlap. And when I watch it, it's like it works when you have an advantage up front. It's very at you. And there's some stuff that's very, you know, like none of it's bad. This is what's it's hard to describe.
Yeah, none of it's offensive.
None of it's like truly unsound. It's just that they put themselves in a lot of disadvantages. Like there's not emotion on certain plays. They are doing the head bob on the first time, every single time. They just don't provide themselves anything with a toolkit. Watch the Rams offense and just like how many cadences or the Jags offense going no huddle at times. A bunch of offenses did this, just changing tempos and just trying to do different stuff. And it just feels like the Chargers is just like 94 mile hour fastball. Low and away. You should like, yeah, you might get it sometimes, but no, like I kind of know it's coming every single time when I play against this offense.
Yeah, also, exactly. Like, and I also
it's frustrating. Sorry. The Patriots won. I do want to talk about a couple Drake May throws, but it's just very frustrating watching this Chargers offense on national TV again. Just like, oh yeah, that's exactly what I predicted in this game. I don't know. It's the Arrested Development dead pigeon thing. I don't know what I was expecting here. Like that's exactly. What I, like when I watch this Chargers offense. Yeah,
that's how I felt by the end of the game. Like even into the fourth quarter, like I just hey, thanks for the memories, but put it down. Like it's enough already. Let's just move on to the next thing here. But yeah, I do think that.
Yeah,
I think we'll see what happens. Obviously, with this team, and I do think an offensive coordinator change should be discussed. But I mean. Yeah. I always come back to when Harbaugh was hired by this team. Jim Harbaugh was hired by the Chargers. Him and friggin' Greg Roman did some like video photo shoot where the boys they were like sitting outside of a trailer, you know, down there by the beach in LA, like having beers or something outside that trailer. I'm like, these guys are they're so tight. Like, I don't know. I don't know if he'll make that move. We'll see. But yeah, I mean, we should probably talk a little bit more about the team that actually did win the game, because even though it is easy to play the Roman hits and the frustration.
Right. Okay. We talked about a little bit Patriots defense. I think this is a great example of how astute coaching staffs can look at a full season of data points and like really hone in on the game plan. I think that's what it felt like with the Patriots defense when I watched them tonight. But also the offense, Drake May, although had the turnovers, the tip ball, the strips, also had moments of like, I mean, the touchdown throw to Hunter Henry was brilliant. I mean, we got Henderson chop blocking in the hole, which is a no-no, by the way, coaching point. Don't chop. You can't, if you're picking up a guy in the A gap, you can't chop him. Cause that exact thing almost happened. Oh, Hanley, did five twirls, twirling towards freedom. May drifts away, hits a sail route. I think it was like a scissors concept. Booty, Kayshon Booty had some nice plays. Mm. He did not make the All-Football 301 team. He's on the JV team. But he had some nice plays, just, you know, catching after the play. Did you have any other Patriots thoughts before we kind of move on? But I thought they just had, this is like, they didn't have a great, perfect game on offense, but they like, it wasn't an outright bad game. They moved the ball. They had explosives. I thought the run game had good moments. I thought May, even with some of the blemishes, had some really nice moments of execution. He had a 3rd-and-13 conversion that was great. But then later he misses Hooper a little high. Hooper, I thought, should have taken a high, but also Hooper's not a great athlete right now. So it's also like, that's a quarterbackism is KYP, know your personnel. just kind of put it on him a little bit more. But any Patriots thoughts for, you know, the winners?
Yeah, I thought it was surprising that Diggs only had 2 catches for 16 yards, despite leading the team in routes run, which is, this was something I talked about a lot during the season. It was like impossible to guess when he was going to play a ton, Stephon Diggs, you know, because like the games that he actually did run a route, I believe, on 80% of the dropbacks before the last few weeks of the season was like Thursday night against the Jets, week 4 against Carolina. What was the reason that was the time to really unleash him, you know, as a full-time player, because he was mostly a part-time guy. And then obviously it's gotten to be nut-cutting time. We're trying to win a playoff game. He's out there a ton, but really didn't have a big impact in this game. I think your point about the Chargers and how they really just suffocate those windows against zone coverage and they have multiple eyes on people, that's probably the guy that they're keying in on. But that did allow for some open windows to Hunter Henry. That did allow for Kayshon Booty, who continues to make a lot of plays at the catch point. So I thought that was good to see. Like, that's what you want out of your, you know, MVP caliber quarterback. It's not going to be perfect. It wasn't a perfect script all night. He probably has some plays that he definitely wants back, but be able to find ancillary answers within your offense, I think that's impressive. That's what you want to see out of a guy like this in this first playoff game.
It's going into this weekend, but when I was previewing it with Chuck, that one of the notes I had was Chargers were 24th in EPA versus tight end targets. And this is what you want when the Patriots offense, all the underlying numbers are good passing wise, and the run game has gotten better. Is that, like you said, if an auxiliary target or secondary target, there's a weakness, you're able to exploit it. Like, it's all these things are relative, and this is what the playoffs are. It's like, okay, what is on the offensive line? Is it just your right guard? Is your right guard and your right tackle? Is it stunts? That's why you saw so many stunts and twists. Everything just becomes hyper fixated. And we kind of want to talk about that throughout the show, but it's like, it kind of just really felt that tonight, I thought, by these defenses. And just some guys were able to squeeze out the plays. That's what the playoffs are, is how many plays you can squeeze out. And that's what, I mean, everything does feel hard, but I was even just looking, sorry, before we kick to the next segment or next game. The dropback success rate for the Chargers, actually, Herbert wasn't that bad. He was 48% on next gen stats, which is more yardage based. And then Patriots 45%, which is good. And, you know, they just couldn't run the ball. Plenty of tight window throws. And I don't know, Herbert didn't have his best game. I thought he did have some sprays. Any parting thoughts on the Chargers? Like I said, the Patriots are playing the winner of the Texans and the Steelers. Thought this was a nice sound performance that wasn't a perfect game. They were able to execute like this. But what do you think? What are you thinking about the Chargers? OC changes, any personnel that you want to add? I don't think Keenan Allen succession plan finally.
Yeah, I like some of the flashes that Trey Harris has shown this year. And he's been somebody who I didn't really expect him to be used in the way that they have used him, which is they've moved him around to all 3 positions. I thought he'd be a guy who's more of like an Alec Pierce type of pure X option. That was kind of the report that I had on him coming into the league, and they've really used him in different ways. They've liked him a lot as a blocker. So I think maybe that could be part of the succession plan. You know, he as more of the Z receiver, lat as your slot, and QJ continue. He's got one more year in his contract, even though they declined his 5th year option. He comes back as the X. Keandre Lambert Smith has some flashes there. So I think they're in a good spot receiver wise. I think that they probably you know, get, I think they're a buy low team ultimately is kind of my thought on the Chargers. Like, I think they're a team that I'd be pretty optimistic on going into 2026.
They are your classic bad team beater. They are the type of like IC champ. They're not a true contender type. They have a couple of weaknesses. Some of them are not their fault. Tons of injuries. So I don't know whose fault that is. And with the Chargers, because that's just a thing apparently with this franchise. But I think oh my God. And so this is the thing too, is the Chargers are try to draft offensive linemen and they just get hurt. It's like, that's the way I feel like kind of bad. And they've missed out on a couple, but I think that they draft another, I wouldn't be mad at them the first, second, third, fourth, and sixth. They have no other picks. So man, if that's kind of the sweet spot for a guard, I think trenches all the way. It's a great defensive tackle class. So maybe, you know, and also just give Tyrae Tart a big extension. I mean, I think he earned it, but anyways, Patriots move on. Chargers, another, I guess, punch above your weight. Let's shore up the trenches offseason. I think that's what they got to do. Next up, earlier game on Sunday, Eagles and 49ers. 49ers win this 23-19 at the Link. I thought after the first drive, the 49ers are kind of like, okay, they kind of like shot their wad. And this is kind of just going to be the game, you know, this, and then their defense is just going to be leaky and the Eagles offense isn't great, but they'll get a couple explosives and this is be that, and they'll squeak out a win by five. It'll be ugly. And that did not happen. Matt Harmon, 49ers take this game with George Kittle tearing Achilles early in the game. And I mean, put together just a great performance. This was the lowest or highest success rate allowed by a Vic Fangio Eagles defense. So since he got to Philly last year, unbelievable game for Shanahan, the 49ers offense of Robert Saleh and the 49ers defense. But what were your thoughts on this one?
Yeah, Brock Purdy, 53.7% success rate, highest among the quarterbacks that played this week, which I didn't guess against this defense.
Yeah.
No. And I mean, he had the two picks to Quinyon Mitchell. I mean, one of them you're throwing to Sky Moore with Quinyon Mitchell in coverage. I mean, the only person who thinks that's a good idea is me charting Sky Moore back at Western Michigan
with Quinyon Mitchell.
Yeah, right. But we probably don't need to be doing that. But otherwise, yeah, I thought this was a typical efficient kind of outing for this 49ers offense. They had some of the same problems that they've had all year where they can't really quite establish a consistent ground game. Obviously, one of the biggest plays of the night comes from Jawan Jennings throwing a pass, which... Incredible stat from Dante Fleming from the NFL Network researcher. He had Jawan Jennings had more completed passes of over 15 air yards, which was one in that game than Jalen Hurts did. He went 0 for 5 on passes of 15 air yards. We'll talk about the Eagles in a second here. But I thought it was just typical 49ers offense where they did get some explosive plays downfield on the number two outside corner. That happens to everybody with this Eagles team. That's when, hey, you're a great defense, but if you've got that one like weak spot that's like glaring green light, teams can just go at it all day long. And the Niners did do that pretty successfully. And then on defense, I mean, it was just another... I mean, God, Robert Saleh's just done a great job with that defense. There's just no like two ways about it. It's been so fun to watch like a young, fast, and aggressive group that doesn't. It's almost like they don't know what they're supposed to be. You know what I'm saying? When you watch this defense,
absolutely. Yes.
They don't know what they don't know type of thing, essentially. And young, that's the way I feel about it, which is
full of something.
Exactly. And listen, it works. It works for them. I really thought, and look, I hate this Eagles offense. I'm glad that we never have to talk about the 2025 Eagles offense after tonight. Very, very thankful for it. I did think they would have some success against this secondary in particular, and that just never really happened.
Same. I thought that was kind of my, you know, worst four units kind of angle like try to take in some of these games. I thought the spread was too much. I thought it should have been more like a pretty even spread between these teams. But I was like, all right, the Eagles defense is pretty elite, like at least top three, top four, however you look at it. Okay, they can stop the run fairly well. All right. Their offense is not I don't think anyone's cup of tea. And also just not very good this year because their run game fell off, which the run game got going a little bit today. But the passing game just is so reliant on explosives and they try different things. They throw different things at the wall every single week. Sometimes they throw deep. Sometimes they don't. Sometimes they do RPOs. Sometimes we're going to get them on the move. And it just feels very reactionary and not proactive. And reactive, not proactive. And then also I was just kind of like, all right, this 49ers defense though is just, they haven't been able to stop anybody. Even in the, you know, games like against the Seahawks, like Seahawks are still able to move the ball, like both air through the air and on the ground. But it, of course, they, you know, they made Sam Darnold have some of his moments. But I was just like, man, I just don't think that, like, I think the Eagles kind of just pull away and win ugly in this. But then sure enough, it was just that they out executed him. I mean, I'm watching it through the fourth and 11. Okay, so fourth and 11, Eric Kendricks gets the PBU to end the game. Non-existent window on that throw, by the way. But the Eagles run four verts after taking the timeout on the play before because they can't get lined up. And then play before that, Devontae Smith almost gets killed. But they run four verts. And remember I was talking about the running backs getting out with the Patriots? The running back doesn't get out. Saquon Barkley hangs up in protection and on four verts. So Eric Kendricks, he's not occupied. So it's a great example. It's not a true high-low, but it's the same essence of that. Is that the linebacker can disregard his underneath assignment, and he can just sink. And he just read Hurts the entire time. And he was like, okay, I'm just going to move over here because I got nothing to occupy me there. It's a tough, like, this kind of sounds obvious, but this is nice football theory. Four verts versus cover four, which I believe what the 49ers were in on that, is – it's kind of tough. You either want to take a matchup on the outside, which to me I would with AJ Brown with fourth in the season on the line. That's the matchup I would take. Or you hit one of the inside seams and against too high. So cover four, cover two, it bends. So those guys were bending, Dallas Goedert and whoever was in the slot. But they're bending on it. And because again, the running back doesn't get out, it's just all muddled. So really the best throws are outside with corners playing 10 yards off. So basically I was saying they're kind of like screwed unless someone made a play. And it was just not a situation that they're making a play. But again, Eric freaking Kendricks, who I kind of laughed at in the preview show. I was like, man, this guy couldn't even cut it on the Cowboys defense last year. I love Eric Kendricks. I loved him with the Vikings back in the day. It's just injuries caught up. One of those things. But it was kind of cool to see, like, you know, the old dog had a little moment where he could wag his tail. You know, like he was like, yeah. Like all of a sudden he was like, oh, I remember how to do this. And I don't know. It was just a kind of very cool moment. And just kind of like amongst this defense with all these young guys, all these injuries, they had a performance like this. They couldn't get any pressure, which also speaks to what Hurts and the passing game was doing. But still, they come out with this victory.
Oh, yeah. Anytime they weren't, you know, trying to, and even when they were trying to heat him up, it's just like Hurts had plenty of time and he still bails out of these clean pockets. It was pathetic. It was pathetic to watch the Eagles offense tonight. But yeah, Kendricks is a great shout out, obviously, on that play there. And yeah, that's just, I think if you could get into his brain in that play, you got to be thinking, really? Like, okay, I've done this a million times. I've done this a million times. So
that's what it looks like
let me just eyes on the quarterback. Okay, he's going to throw it right here, right where I'm dropping. That's fine with me. So yeah, the one kind of like old wily guy here on this defense of the young dumb guys who don't know what I'm saying dumb affectionately, by the way, like these young guys that don't know what don't know what they're doing here, don't know what they don't know. It was pretty cool to see that. So yeah, Saleh's just done again a great job here. I think he's justifiably getting a lot of buzz as a potential head coaching option here. So I'd be interested to see what that looks like in a second act. But I think 49ers fans and people in that building got to be thinking, blow those interviews, buddy. We really, really like having you here. That has been money well spent for San Francisco to get him there.
I know he can just keep pointing at the Jets and go, see, don't worry about the trades they made this year. See what I was putting up with. I thought too, and you've brought this up a couple times, like just kind of the thing. This is the playoffs. You take the matchups that you get, like, or the advantages. The NFL in general is a matchup league. But in the playoffs, again, it's just so hyper-fixated. It's really cool, again, to see good coordinators go against each other, good play callers. Shanahan had a great game. But the Eagles were against running back targets. Were 27th in success rate going today, 28th in yards per attempt, 30th in explosive pass rate, and 25th in EPA per pass. And again, there's CMC going off. The touchdown that he had was an awesome design. They kind of like played off of, again, playoffs is cool. They play off tropes. And so that's a classic running back or a play in the red zone where you leak the running back through the opposite B gap. And it's usually a man beater. And so there's CMC, who was extremely dangerous, especially with some, you know, Ricky Pearsall out and everything in the red zone, especially runs to the flat with everybody else running across, kind of trying to create, you know, against the grain, almost like setting a picket fence, and instead he angles back inside. And it was just one of these things where it's just watching him, just like, mwah. And like, just like, oh, that is just such nice design. Like, it's just little tweaks off of something you show all the time. Like, the offense from Shanahan trees love that play. Andy Reid loves that play. And you just set it up. And then it's just like, at these times, these opportune times, you just have these little twists. That's why call sheets can get so long. It's just like these just little one-offs, that, like these perfect situations you call them. So you hopefully have the rep for it. You hopefully get the look. And they got the look. And so that receiving touchdown, I think it was in the fourth quarter. That was just a great design. I also thought, just again, you already brought up the stat, but the Juwan Jennings thing, what a great throw. And I know everybody loves this, but he was a quarterback in college at Tennessee, which is significant. It's not nothing. But man, just we're – Juwan Jennings friendly on Football 301, and I believe on the fantasy forecast as well.
Oh yeah.
But I was gonna say, Hurts finished with what, 168 passing yards and 35 dropbacks, only pressured six times the whole night, sacked once.
Good Lord.
And that was when he was a clean pocket, stepped up to one scramble. And I think an offense that is spending this much money on and had 10 of 11 guys. Lane Johnson was hurt, which is significant, but still you have 10 of 11 starters out there, and you just kind of execute like this. It's just like, man, you just end the season with so many questions about the Eagles, more than just like definitive answers, or just more just like shrugs and like squints, I guess is a good way to put it. Is that kind of how you're looking at the Eagles, especially as you're preparing that column that you're prepping for Yahoo, Matt?
Yeah, it's essentially the column's always like, what does the, you know, what needs to happen specifically for offense, for like the team going into the offseason? And to me, I think you just got to scrap the entire thing if you're Philly, but that's maybe easier said than done. Obviously we've talked about this plenty, that, oh, why don't they do this in the Eagles offense despite like what the coordinator is? That's because this is the quarterback you've committed to. That's a big part of this here, but you just can't with a straight face run that back after what you just did this season. And I like, you win the division, who cares? You make it the first round of the playoffs, no one cares. Like, this was the predictable outcome for what we've been seeing all season long for Philadelphia, which is that they were going to, you know, it's like, oh, cool, they keep winning. Well, at some point, you're going to go up against a team that, number one, is not is so far beyond having a full deck in San Francisco. You know, we talked about the defense. They lose George Kittle to an Achilles injury in this one. Shout out to some great reporting I saw from Diana Rossini of The Athletic, reported that there was a tequila bottle sent down to the locker room.
The great elixir of the gods.
Her initial report was, okay, San Francisco 49ers employee just walked into the locker room carrying what appears to be a bottle of tequila. Best guess, it's for George Kittle. She followed that up saying, by here's what I found out, it was Patron. The bottle was sent from the owner from his suite to Kittle after he requested it, and the bottle is now empty. She tweeted that at 10:40 p.m. Eastern. So, yeah, that's a little bit of – I bet that started out as a drink your pain and then, you know, celebration. That's how you get that bottle from full to empty there if you're George Kittle. But, again, they lose him in the middle of this game. They're already playing without Pearsall, and this is still the team that was able to take down – Philadelphia, because of course it is, because you highlighted that beautifully with Christian McCaffrey. And I mean, he averaged 6.8 air yards per target in this game, which for a running back is high. Like, that's really high for a running back, obviously. And he's not a normal running back. I never want to lose track of the fact that he is like a singular talent in the NFL. What he is as a player, playing with one of the best play callers of our lifetime. And yeah, of course, like, that guy was able to find the holes that exist in that Eagles defense, and then the offense just had nothing to punch back with in return, because they ain't had anything to punch back with all season long. So for me, like, I do think big changes should be on the table here for Philadelphia. I don't know how they couldn't be.
I don't either. I get the O-line dropped off. Like, that's the one thing that the strength of the team didn't become the strength, or it wasn't the strength. The defense picked up. Vic Fangio is definitely not a problem. The Jalen Phillips trade worked well. I thought that was a nice move. So defensively, it's like, yeah, the linebackers had ups and downs, injuries, good and bad play, some weaknesses you could pick at. Maybe, you know, Jalen Carter being hurt, you could feel that a little bit. But, you know, when he's on the field, you definitely feel him. And I think, you know, Jordan Davis had some moments this year. Like, I don't know. There's a lot of positives on the defensive side. And even when I had question marks, they started to get answered, like CB2. But I digress, because the offense is just like, it shouldn't be like this. Like, I get the run game. There's times where you're not getting the push that you want, but I think they just like handcuffed themselves. Again, this is a team that has tendencies that are obvious, you know, gun, where the running back is aligned. When they're under center, they have tendencies as well. They don't mix it up enough. It's a lot of rock, paper, not a lot of rock, paper, scissors. And even when throwing the ball, you know, there's a lot of wind tonight. I was curious if who would be affected more quarterback wise. And I'm going to talk about this with the Packers Bears game as well. But I was curious. I was like, wow, is, you know, what how is this wind going to affect the passing plans for these teams? Because neither, I mean, the Eagles run offense hasn't been great this whole year. Cause in the past, I would just be like, they're going to run it 40 times. They can't do that anymore. And with Hurts, cause he throws to the outside when he's thrown kind of, you know, those require a lot more, you know, usually arc, and wind's going to affect that. And wind's going to push that to side to side. And then even Purdy, you know, a Shanahan offense, whether it's in Miami with the Dolphins or, you know, this version right here in San Fran, what's the trope with this? It's all throwing over the middle. And I thought Purdy, who does not have a very strong arm, was throwing with confidence and throwing where it was like, okay, I got to throw it over here. And that was able to kind of beat the wind. And Hurts tried a couple over the middle, including the last throw of the game. But it's not like hasn't been the offense. AJ Brown did have the one drop. I thought it wasn't the easiest catch, but he did have the one drop. But it's just like, they have to make a change of play caller. Nick Sirianni can't point at himself as a play caller, because when he's benched himself, I mean, it was, I think, the first time he benched himself, the only time, his first year, it turned out to be a great thing for this franchise and for the offense and everything. The O-line and Barkley, I thought Barkley has fallen off a little bit as well. I don't think he's making as many guys miss. He's not running through as many tackles. Maybe it's because the blocks aren't getting there and he's not getting as much speed and momentum, but I'm not sure. Like, they have a lot of interesting decisions to make. I think everything is on the table. I'm not sure. Not to try to sound super dramatic, you got to think of who the GM is. Like, Howie Roseman doesn't just sit still, and not to be like, oh, boogeyman and everything, you know, how he kind of gets that with the media sometimes, like everything he touches is gold and everything. But also, I'm just curious what he decides. I think another, and I'm not trying to make this up, Tanner McKee, the backup quarterback, is an interesting subplot of this offseason because of this quarterback class and because of free agency and because of how many open seats there are. Does someone make a Kevin Cobb trade? Like, there's just, Dallas Goedert seems beat up. AJ Brown is not doing media post appearances. He's just deucing out of the locker room. I don't know, man. Lane Johnson got banged up a ton this year. Offensive line, they have some more question marks. There's a lot to sort out with this team, and they're the defending Super Bowl champions, which is just, it just feels kind of normal in Philly land, apparently.
Yeah, Barkley turns 29 years old next month. A lot of touches. I think that, to me, I don't know that I have seen him like really take a big step back individually, but I do think that he's the type of back that you mentioned, like he can't get that momentum, you know, with the best run scheme in the NFL and the best run blocking in the NFL, like we saw in 2024. I think that it's just like, okay, well, he becomes like a normal good NFL back, which is not good enough to be the team that they need to be, because they have just nothing going on in the passing game that's anything interesting. It's funny, like, I mean, some of the best plays that even tonight, like some of the best plays that they had were to Dallas Goedert, a guy that they didn't even want on the team this year. Like that was kind of somebody will trade for him and then know what he did, and it was, all right, well, we'll just take him back. And I would say if you had to give Kevin Petullo anything this year, I think they designed some cool stuff in the red zone to Dallas Goedert, which is just, again, funny because he's the guy that they didn't even want around this year. And yeah, I mean, AJ Brown is going to be a tough contract to get out of. They just gave him that extension not too long ago, but does he want to be there? I would say probably not. Does he want to be there if it's a different coaching staff? Maybe. But yeah, I think with some of these names that are going to be available in coaching free agency this year, it's going to be at least an interesting conversation for High Roseman and Jeffrey Lurie to have there in Philadelphia. We've seen them do this before. Like, okay, Doug Peterson, come here and give us a, I know you just won the Super Bowl, give us the pitch. Like, why should you be here? They have that meeting and then boom, he's out. And I think that ended up being a really good decision for them. So I think that could potentially happen here. And yeah, I love that you brought up Tanner McKee. Like, this is an offseason where teams, I've said this about Malik Willis, you know, teams are going to have to get like creative to find a sellable solution at quarterback. With what McKee has done in spurts, he could be maybe one of those options.
He, again, you're just kind of trying to take it. It's a glorified flyer. You know, flyer plus. It's not giving up a top 10 lottery pick, but also trying to solve the position, which is the most important position, of course, but we'll have some little upside. Like, that's why I think he's an interesting name, because also I like what I see. I'm not saying this guy's, oh my God, he's Steve Young sitting behind Joe Montana.
Yeah,
he's, you know, like, just wait, he's going to be MVP his first year starting. I don't know. I think there's a positive starter there, a guy that you can get by with at the very least, and maybe have more to tap into as he gets more starts. And I kind of ragged the Eagles run game today, and it was good today, but the thing was, this whole season, it was just not something it relied on. And it wasn't like the passing game ever evolved. It was, now they didn't have that training wheels, and you can't have a game where they have that few pressures. I mean, truly, only six pressures the entire game, which is usually like, oh my God, that's amazing. And we ran the ball at a 48% rushing success rate. Oh my God, so we must have just shredded them, right? To have a 38 passing success rate and only one explosive pass, two explosive plays the whole game. And this league is about explosives. And this Eagles offense that's what makes or breaks the whole team, is explosives. And it's just, man, they just got to figure it all out. All right, 49ers are playing the Seahawks. That should be a fun game, even though we just saw it a couple of weeks ago. But three games, man. Best of three. Throw out the record book. When these two teams get together, let's party like it's, you know, speaking of Harbaugh, you know, speaking of all that. All right, let's move over to the AFC. Bills, Jags. This is how this game started out, or this day started out. Bills win this 27-24. Very entertaining game. It kind of like, the weekend like started high and kind of just like stayed high. And then it just kind of tapered off as Sunday went along. stayed high though. Like, it was still a very positive day. I do not want to complain, but it also just kind of like, after, you know, Sunday morning was pretty fun. So Bills win this game 27-24 in Duval. Josh Allen went full dragon psycho, Professor Chaos. Oh yeah. This guy is, again, he's the belt holder in the playoffs. Maybe he's the undeserved champion, the uncrowned champion of the playoffs, but he's just a force of nature, dude. 373 yards passing, 33 yards rushing, two touchdowns on the ground, one through the air, a couple plays that were almost like a Brandon Cooks drop, which should have been another 30 yard gain. Big play to Brandon Cooks where Greg Newsom got nosy. I've been trying to figure that one out. Big play to Keon Coleman, and then a lot of Shakir underneath. But what did you think about this Bills performance? Forced a couple Trevor Lawrence turnovers beginning and the end of the game. But yeah, Josh Allen, whew, pretty good. I don't know if you know that, Matt.
Pretty good football player. Yeah, it was it was so funny to see the CBS, CBS broadcast crew. We'll leave it at that. But CBS puts up the, and I'm not, I don't mean to say the crew. Everybody knows what I'm talking about. Wolf.
I was going
to
say, yeah.
Okay, so there's a lot of, man, people I don't want to throw under the bus.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. But they throw up the graphic about here's all of his ranks in the playoff. You know, Josh Allen, first in this, first in this, first in this, first in this, first in this. And then, oh, well, he got something he didn't have in the playoffs, which was like fourth quarter game winning comeback drive. It's like, yeah, he just keeps stacking up stuff. And for whatever reason, all the, you know, BS talk shows want to, you know, hey, if he doesn't win this game, doesn't matter how it goes, it's a Josh Allen thing. It's just like, it's just outrageous. But yeah, to me, like, coming into this game, I thought, hey, it's fair to wonder with the way this Bills team has been, you know, both from a run defense perspective and how much they have relied on their own ground game with James Cook, if Jacksonville, which they have done all season, just blots out the Buffalo Bills run game, what's going to happen here? Like, how does the passing offense respond? Well, guess what? It responded with an incredible Josh Allen game, because that's what he does, man. And they have obviously not put nearly enough around him. There's no question about that. I've been talking about it all season. Bills fans love to talk about it, and I totally get it. But my God, like, you've got the guy who can just put it all on his back, which is Josh Allen. And I think it was also, you know, Joe Brady's a guy that also catches some strays every now and again. I thought he had a nice game as well. A couple of good designs to get the tight ends open down the field. There was obviously the one fake screen play to Dalton Kincaid, goes in for the big weekend for fake screens, by the way. So that was obviously cool to see. That was a good design. There were a couple others to get those tight ends free down the field as well. So yeah, I thought it was just a great game from Josh Allen. Like, definitely exactly what you would want to see here. Like, and that's a tough Jacksonville defense to play against. I don't know if people listen, Football 301, watch our show, know how good Jacksonville has been this year. We actually talked about it a good bit on the underappreciated show. But yeah, that's a tough defense to go against. That's not just some like joke over there.
Yeah, the AFC, I mean, everyone's game. Like, this playoffs is very live. I mean, shoot, even the game that I thought was going to be the biggest blowout was the biggest spread road favorite in betting history, but turned into a very tight game where I thought that big favorite was about to lose. That's the game we'll end the show with. But all these AFC teams are just close. Now I'm including it into the next round. Like, these are all tight. There's not a lot of perfect units. And it was kind of cool to see, again, you try to take away the strengths or mitigate strengths in the playoffs, and then just not to get too much like the commentator today in this game, but, you know, and just make the other things important, or make the weaknesses, you know, amplify the opponent's weaknesses and everything. Like, it truly is that. It's kind of, again, when you see good staffs do it, like the Bills defense and like what Sean McDermott, this defense did. All right, what have the Jags picked up on after Jacoby Myers? I think you even had a tweet about it. Inbreakers. Like, that's what's just Trevor Lawrence has been like a top five inbreaker thrower. And then where were his two picks? Inbreakers, appropriately an inbreaker to Jacoby Myers, ended their season, which I...
They died as they lived.
Man, that's some O. Henry irony right there. Like, it's just, this is what, you know, created the season, and then like just open up the entire season, the offense and all the good feelings, and that's what ends your season on the tip ball. Oof, that was ironic. But the Jags defense, though, I thought they slowed down the Bills run game, and this is why the Bills team is just so very live. It's just that they have that run game, so if you're not harping on that, they can get you. And then they have Josh Allen, who, even though he was like hobbling, nursing like an injured finger, Joe Brady's like, we're using you like a battering ram. Go get him, Tiger. And I mean, he executed. He had like a 10-yard. And then hurts his knee. I think he went to the medical tent like for like three different ailments. Like,
oh yeah.
He had a hat trick of medical tent visits. But man, it's just that he's a warrior. Against pressure. Speaking of just even pressure, you talk about the talking head shows, but like literal pressure today, he was 9-12 for 144 yards. And I thought the Shakir stuff, I shared the target map of his today on his routes today. Sometimes you beat blitzes with gashes and attacking down the field, but they were just like, let's just run flats and bubbles and quick hitters and make them tackle. And again, against the blitz, he was 11-13 for 85 yards, which isn't like, usually it's against the blitz, it's like for 150 because you gashed him, but he was just peppering. I thought he was in full control today. I thought Trevor Lawrence had some nice moments where he was in full control today. And also the Jaguars run game was popping off. I thought they were about to win. Oh, so I had a whole breakdown about the run game, but that was impressive today. But that speaks to the Bills defense tightening down everything they were able to execute today. So any more thoughts kind of what they did today?
Yeah, it's crazy. Khalil Shakir, 12 targets, 12 catches, 1.8 air yards per target. And I did like that a lot as the response to pressure here, which is like, Khalil Shakir is a guy who obviously, look, I think Shakir is a really nice player. He was a guy I really liked in the draft as a day. I ranked him as a day two guy, went on day three. I've always been a big fan of his as a player. This is the way you want to use him as like an answer to pressure. And I think he's been a big part of like why they've kind of almost had to incentivize and sometimes squeeze out the Professor Chaos gene for Josh Allen. Hey, you can take the layups, pal, because guess what? This guy's going to actually be where you want him to be. And he can do stuff. He didn't have any monster run after catch or like multiple monster run after catch moments in this game, but he's going to get you 5 yards after the catch consistently. If not 7, 8, you know, he's going to just be steady. Like, he will add things on if you take the layup. So it's a good usage for him here. He should not necessarily be like your number one receiver, but he's awesome in this individual given role. Like, just imagine if there was a counterpunch here in the wide receiver room, how much even more useful Shakir would feel at times. So I thought that Buffalo had a good plan there. And then you mentioned it with Jacksonville. I did think that they were going to run, like literally run away with this game. Not that they were going to blow Buffalo out or anything, But I mean, I think they might have gotten away from the run game a little bit too much. 75% of Bashal Tutin's carries went for 10 plus yards. 25% of Travis Etienne's carries went for 10 plus, or 20%, excuse me, of Travis Etienne's carries went for 10 plus yards. And that was kind of what I thought might happen here with this ground game against Buffalo's defense. So I thought there was maybe you could have maybe leaned on that even a little bit more.
Yeah, no, there was the play where they ripped off three explosives in a row to Tutin. And it was just the ideal stuff that you do. So like how the Bills play, they're very, truly their whole defense is like a net, but they like to have four down, and then they like to have their off ball players, whether it's two linebackers or three linebackers or two linebackers in the slot or in the nickel or the safety. They like to have them as a stack alignment. So they're off the ball. And there's ways to attack that. So that's where you see a lot of jet motion. That's when you see a lot of split zone, which is where you see a guy crossing the formation, typically a tight end. And those plays, like those Tutin plays, it was just like the idea. It was like clinic tape. Jet motion, pin pull, which is a great play. And you could do pin pull. And one of them's they had another pin pull, a bunch of pin pulls today. But Jacoby Myers, like DeCleats, Joey Bosa, which was awesome.
He had a couple of nice
you're able to get the Bills on those. Yeah, and Bosa has always been susceptible to that because he knows why he gets paid. And so he's always been a little blind for taking some side shots. But that's how the Bills play, and you can get them. But again, they just tighten down when they need to. But I agree. The Jacks were still moving the ball fine, but it was just that the run game was just so – they were getting whatever they wanted, and now they're just hitting just explosives. It wasn't just like a little 3-4-yard gains where it's like – I'm tweeting on Tuesday, like, hey, look at this 4-yard gain on Duo. It was just like 15-yard gains, 14-yard gains over and over and over. So, Trevor finished with a 58% success rate. Like, that's going to be something to talk about, keep an eye on with the Bills. But if they're opportunistic like this, McDermott's always been able to get turnovers. It's just what they trade. Yeah. They got Tre'Davious White making two freaking hero plays today. He had the tip interception at the end, and then he had the one on Brenton Strange on the seam. He just lunges on over. That's what McDermott does. So it's kind of cool to see like these guys play really well, even if they're susceptible to kind of big plays. Anything more on the Bills, or do you want to think of what the Jags and what they have to do this offseason? They have a second rounder. They have three third rounders. It's a great draft to fade in the first round, by the way. So maybe they're on something here, but I think they just bang on. I'm just trying to give them a little benefit of the doubt. I think they need to go trenches on both sides, but I'm curious what you think.
Yeah, I think trenches on both sides is a great idea, especially offensively. I'd love to see that offensive line turn into a group that I think punched above its weight at times this year into truly like a real advantage of an offensive line. I think that could really – this offense obviously was not – there's just been so many like iterations of like who's playing for this offense, what they do well, what they don't do well, especially in the passing game. That I think is an interesting question into what happens next year. But I think this could actually maybe be more of a consistent unit wire to wire if they're better up front, if they're more of a true, like I said, true advantage of an offensive line, both in the run and pass game. But they do have some interesting decisions to make, specifically in the skill position kind of department. Travis Etienne's a free agent this offseason. I don't know that they're in a position where they can just like let him walk out the building, because he had a really, really nice year for them. I think answered some questions about him as a player. Obviously they like Tutin. Tutin showed some explosive ability in this game in particular, but that's something that they got to ask themselves. I really wonder what the future of this receiver room looks like, because Parker Washington is legit awesome. Jacoby Myers is a good player. They just extended. He'll be 29 this upcoming year. Obviously, like, how much does Travis Hunter play wide receiver for them? Does he play more full-time cornerback? And, is BTJ a guy that they maybe think about trading in the offseason? I don't know that I would necessarily do that, but that has been something that they have talked about. And he, at this point, is just kind of filed into this. He's good at what he does, but it's a X receiver only role, and that only has like so much value in this offense if that's all you're going to do.
And again, this regime is aggressive and creative. I think that's the best way I'll put it. This is a regime that will trade. I mean, especially they didn't draft him. Like, that's a big thing too. Yeah. I thought BTJ actually had some. It's very funny when BTJ now comes down with the football. Like, the entire team, Jack's team, is like, oh my god, good job, man. Like everyone's just kind of, it's like that extra like little breath they take when he catches the ball. I mean, the touchdown was a nice grab, but then he caught another one towards the sideline and you can tell like the entire Jack sideline was like, oh my God, he came down with it. Oh my God. Yeah. It was a contested catch and he caught it. But like, that's also just speaks to like the confidence they maybe have, like as a kind of like a whole franchise and everything. And I'm curious what they could decide with those positions. I'm also curious. I thought their defense punched above its weight the entire year. Had some injuries kind of crop up. But I think they need a safety. They have some questions with the linebackers. I think in free agency, I think Lloyd is a free agent.
Lloyd's a free agent. Yep.
That's a big one. They get the most of what they have. They're a well-designed offense, well-designed defense. I'm curious if anyone hires Campanelli. I know he has some interest, but I think, man, you gotta be bullish about what they could be next year. Especially if they had to add to the O-line, I'd be a lot more juiced up about where this whole team is, just along the trenches and the spine, I think, of the defense. But they do some real cool stuff. And yeah, I think this is all signs point to like a big successful year for Liam Cohen, even if it didn't end perfect. I thought both of these teams finished with 20 first downs. Like the Jags finished with a higher success rate in every category, far more explosive plays. They ran for 154 yards. They converted on 50% of their third downs. 24% of their design runs went for 12 or more yards. 60% of the running back runs were successful. Trevor Lawrence only got hit once. Oh, like a good game on offense. They just had the turnover at the beginning, turnover at the end. So I think that's how the playoffs are. You can't have those mistakes. Going on to the Bills, they play the Broncos next weekend. Oh, great note. Thank you, Stone. The Bills open as 1.5-point favorites. Any quick thoughts before we move on to the next game on that game?
I'm sure Broncos fans are thrilled with that. I'm sure they're loving that.
Oh yeah.
To see that for sure. Yeah, I think that's going to be a really interesting one because it's sort of yet another game where it's just like, how much can Josh Allen carry this team? Not that he's doing everything. I don't mean to make it all about the quarterback. I think that's nauseating, but offensively, I do think that's going to have to be a big thing. And can the defense, which was opportunistic, I mean, great play by Shaq Thompson on his interception too. He's a guy that has popped up for this team as well. So like, can we get some of those moments against an offense that's obviously very up and down in Bo Nix and the boys over there?
That was a Urlacher-esque interception. Urlacher got so many picks on that type. Just cover two, drop, read just the quarterback. There.
Yep.
It was because that's how you attack cover two is dig. So after a while, if you're used to it, it's like, okay, it's going to be one of just these.
Like this offense routes. Is okay, throwing a lot of dig routes.
A lot of ticks, a lot of in-breakers. Top five rate in the back half of the season. It was very apparent. Anyone watching? Bills, last two notes. Bills got a road win for a road playoff win for the first time since I think they're like 93, I think it was. And also the line judge and the down judge for the refs on the sidelines had a rough game in this game. Holy crap. They could not spot the ball to save their lives. That was some of the worst spotting I've ever seen. I wanted to get those people tested. And they're hyping up like all these teams have like extra units to like help out these refs and everything. It was like, how are they going to, they couldn't spot. I mean, so many plays. The one was the Josh Allen, like 10-yard tush push. And like they've awarded him the touchdown, which like the Jags probably actually kind of wanted. But it was almost like the line judge got like caught up in the emotion of the play. Like, yeah this is awesome. So like, cool. Touchdown. He missed so many spots. It was notable. Like, that's why I have to bring it up. It was very notable. But
definitely super cool when the line judge and the booth and the ref official, you know, booth advisor, and the virtual measurement, nobody can agree on what they saw. That's awesome. No. That's really a good thing.
What also, did I misinterpret sliding rules and spotting on slide rules my entire life? It was like Josh Allen slid, and then they're like, oh yeah, it's when he's tapped down that's where he's spotted. So it's where he starts to slide. Am I wrong? Yeah. Like, I thought I was like, did I miss? And then they go to Gene. And Gene, note card Gene is like, oh yeah, it's when he's touched down. I was like, whoa, what? So maybe I missed something. Maybe it was like a huge sideways slid and like something. It was weird, but I don't know. There was a rough day for everybody. Fun game, entertaining game. I think good, but maybe imperfect teams. I'm excited for that Sean McDermott, Sean Payton battle of the Seans, Sean squared. That's gonna be pretty fun. All right, move on. NFC. Bears, Packers. The Bears win 31-27. Talk about long playoff droughts. That was the Bears' first win against the Packers in the playoffs since Pearl Harbor happened. And it's an actual stat.
Pearl Harbor?
I think it was like the week after Pearl Harbor.
Harbor.
So it's been a 1941 for any history buffs out there. December 1941 for any. So 2 days that lived in infamy in that month. But big comeback from K.O. Williams and the Bears offense. It's late, man. It's later than the East Coast time. I'm West Coast. I'm
so shook about Pearl Harbor. I don't know why I came. You know, hey, my grandfather, my papaw, was at Pearl Harbor 2 weeks before it was bombed. So shout out to him.
Out of there. I thought that, okay. I went like 40 years after it was bombed. So we got something in common. Was he in the service or was he just visiting?
Yeah, he was in the Navy. He was in the Navy. So yeah,
his ship was better.
No. He wasn't there on a tour catching the Bears game. No, he was also not from Chicago whatsoever. I don't think he was a fan of football. He's a very serious man, my papa. So I don't know if he was watching football back in the day. But anyways, he was there he was stationed there, and then, you know, his ship left about 2 weeks before. Anyways, that's definitely what people care about.
Well, thankfully, we're able to do the show. Thankfully he got out of there. So we're able to do the show now. But anyways, enough of that. There's fire at Pearl Harbor. There's also a lot of fire by the quarterbacks in the second half. Caleb Williams and Jordan Love both just went nuts in the second half. I thought, first off, like the losing team, Packers, in their passing game, Romeo Doubs had a big night. Another All Football 301 member, kind of. It was a long mention.
Yeah, we mentioned him.
But he had some big moments. Slot fade, one-handed catch. Christian Watson had some nice moments. Golden finally stepped up, had some nice moments. A touchdown, outbreaker in the fourth quarter. That was really nice. Jaden Reed had some moments. He had a drop late, but also had some moments as well. But Caleb Williams hit 12 explosive passes in this game, which is, licked it up, 12 explosive passes, tied for the third most in a playoff game since 2002. The most is 14 by the Patriots against the Eagles in the Philly Special Super Bowl, by the way. Next Gen Stats had him with 11 in the second half. They do 15 yards or more. It's tied for the most in a playoff game since 2016. Packers, by the way, had 11 explosives, go to 8 passes, 3 runs. But this Bears offense was ripping them in the second half. Colson Loveland is a moose. Outbreakers galore, some inbreakers in there. I mean, everything after the Luther Burden botch where he threw up the mailbox and didn't run the inbreaker and it was picked. Everything basically after that, ran the wrong route. It was like, there's Luther Burden at Mizzou that I know. But it was like, you know, after that, it was pretty clear sailing. As the run game got stifled, which was a big surprise to me because I thought this Packers run defense would get run all over. But man, it was started with a long drive, and I thought both these offense got clicking, and then the second half, the quarterbacks really got clicking. But what'd you think about this game? Now that we're past the World War II Day of Infamy talk.
Yeah, thank God. Man, it was an incredible football game. It was so much fun to watch. This was one
so
where
much fun,
especially coming off the Panthers Rams game, which we'll talk about, where I was like, oh man, that was so fun and so exciting. I was so nervous at, you know, down 21-3 that this is this was going to be a letdown.
Yeah.
By the way, did you love the anecdote?
Oregon.
Yeah, exactly. Did you love the anecdote that apparently Ben Johnson said that he showed the team the 28-3 team, he showed them footage from that Super Bowl in training camp to let them know, like, yeah, it's never over. He showed them the Falcons page and like Grady Jarrett is on that team. Speaking of like PTSD, did they have him get up and talk about it? Like, what does it feel like, Grady, to know that your team is locked into a win? Yeah, any lessons learned about how to screw it up on the other side? But I thought that was insane. Anyways, it was an incredible comeback from the Bears. And yeah, Caleb Williams and that offense just releasing haymakers. 67% of his completions go for 10 plus yards in this game, most among quarterbacks this weekend. And yeah, it's just, look, he's going to miss some throws. 100%. That might just always be part of his repertoire as a quarterback. It just might be a little bit who he is. Maybe it won't be, but right now it's definitely who he is. These young skill position players, they're going to screw something up every now and again too. And that's why this offense feels so up and down, but those highs, man, I think I said this to you on Twitter that he's Caleb Williams. He's gonna miss some throws. Cons, he's going to miss some throws. Pros, the ones that he hit are like some of the best throws you've ever seen in your entire life. And Colson Loveland looks like one of the best tight ends you've ever seen in your entire life when he's firing. Yes. When the young wide receivers can do their job and run their routes at the right depth, they look really good and in sync with the quarterback as well. So to me, I said this to you like 2 months ago at this point, that I didn't know if it was going to be this year, but I definitely think it's going to be in coming years that you're going to really, you Bears fans are going to be really happy and really like what you see out of this passing game. And I think part of the highs in this moment are like the proof of concept there.
That's it. It's even when moments weren't going great, like that initial interception, everything, it's a high wire offense. It asks a lot. It's very aggressive. It's a lot of downfield concepts. It requires a lot of operation from everybody. You know, the longer that you want to pass, as far as just throwing the ball down the field, the longer the drop back is, the more moving parts there are, and especially an offense that wants to use more motion and shifting than most offenses and package plays together. Just more moving parts means more things can go wrong. When you got a second-year quarterback, a rookie tight end, a rookie receiver, a second-year receiver coming off injury, hasn't played in a few years. Supposed to be a smart player. He has been.
A month plus.
And then your vet receiver is kind of known for botching. That's not ideal. And then you have a seventh-round rookie running back as your second running back that gets a lot of snaps and is actually one of your protection backs. Things can look rocky. But then when it clicks, that's when you get the most explosives in one half. Like they got like this, it's so much like a run game like this, like a run game that doesn't click how they have had it, at least for most of the season. Like, and all of a sudden, if you're just trying to pass the ball, and all of a sudden you just can't become like, oh, we're going to become a dink and dunk team. That's why in the we fail on fourth down early in the game in our own territory, but just not shying away and kind of keep adding it. Like it's commendable. Like that's, I've played freaking Madden and went from the fourth down king to like, oh, I'm going to take this field goal. Like, and I'm like pretty ballsy of a play caller, like in like real life and in video game sense. And it's just one of these things where I'm like, even I kind of shy away. And this is Ben Johnson's first playoff game at home. The crowd is absolutely losing their freaking mind, just raucous. And they keep at it. Like it wasn't going great. And sometimes when you need big plays and need points, they can kind of open it up for you a little bit. Like, all right, I got to swing for the fences anyway. Let's do this. It's just cool. It's just to trust your young players to make plays, to trust that there's kind of perfections in the imperfections a little bit. There's times Caleb is going to the right guy and he's just so juiced up. He's really one of the strongest arms in the league, like bar none. I mean, top four. Legit. And the fact sometimes he leads them a little too much, kind of like trying to be a little too perfect. And it's like, all right, you also throw out 70 miles an hour. So just put it on him. But that's the thing, is like you take all those blemishes, you take all the interception on fourth down, where the interception on playing the red zone, going 2 for 6 on fourth down, and just kind of keeping at it. It's very cool to watch when young players kind of get that confidence and just kind of see them build off of that. Just kind of last little stat I'll say, but you know, kind of like some Packers talking here too, but throws outside the numbers, most of these were to Loveland. But Caleb went 10 of 21 for 170 yards, 78 yards on throws outside the numbers. Jordan Love went 12 of 19 for 189 yards and 2 touchdowns outside the numbers. Again, 15 mile an hour plus wins in January. Like, that's why this passing performance felt a little different than some of the other games I watched. It was just kind of one of these things where these offenses, these quarterbacks are so aggressive, and it's cool that they don't need a dome. They don't need everybody to be perfect. They don't need everyone to be healthy. And they're just like, let's just keep rocking, keep ripping it, keep throwing it. So yeah, I got a bunch of other stuff on this game, but I just was pretty excited during this game because there's some cool quarterback performances, especially on the Bears end.
Yeah, 10 of 14 on throws under 2.5 seconds for Caleb Williams. That was from Next Gen Stats. I think that's really emblematic of, I think, where he is at this point, which is just when he's feeling it, like when he's really confident in what he sees and he's getting the ball out. You know, Ben always talks about, Ben Johnson talks about, is like when the primary is there and it's open and we hit him, like it feels really, really good. That's when, and like that takes time. It takes reps. It's a really complicated offense, but he does that. And then he also gets the throw on 4th and 8 to Roma Dunze, which is just like one of the best throws I've ever seen in my entire freaking life. It's absurd. It's absurd. What he gets on that, on the platform, everybody's seen it at this point. You know, it's just like, it's a perfectly catchable ball. He throws Odunze open a little bit there too. It was perfect. And like the fact that he can do that, and I'm not saying he's perfect. Like, I'm not one of these people. I think that the fact that we either have to say he sucks or he's awesome or he's like elite already, I think is stupid. Like, it's somewhere in the middle. And where he goes from here, I think progression's not always linear. It's not like, okay, well, he was this year, and then next year he's going to be even better and better and better. It's just not how it works in football. It's not how it works in life. But man, there's just so much promise there that I'm really excited to see this offense as it continues to go, not just next year, into next week, because they're a really good team, right? And they're absolutely a team that can make a run here. There's no question about that to me.
Yeah, and the defense had some nice moments in the second half, like especially totally against the Packers offense. It's not always easy. You know, they have plenty of holes that you can get. Like, Jordan Love got hot in the fourth quarter. He had 50% success rate on 48 dropbacks in the game, 17% explosive passes. That includes 8 throwaways or spikes, 10 for 10 on outbreakers for 97 yards and 1 touchdown. So there are those moments. But like, I think this is a great stat. Caleb Williams had 2 picks, but he still ended up with a 0.18 EPA per dropback. It's because this offense is just so aggressive. And then when it mattered, like those big plays, fourth downs, the Zacchaeus touchdown, when they finally were kind of clicking, they were executing, taking advantage of it. I wanted to highlight the 2-point play to Colson Loveland, because this is what kind of Loveland brings to the table. And this is also like, Ben Johnson's good at this and slash the Bears staff. Heavy personnel, they get the Bears to match. I believe they had a 6th offensive lineman, they're 14 jumbo personnel. Which is, so they had 4 tight ends, one of those tight ends being a 6th offensive lineman, running back, and that's it. And the Packers match with their goal line package. So 6 defensive linemen, 4 linebackers, and only 1 true defensive back. And one of those linebackers was Nick Neiman. So who is Nick Neiman? Other than he has the same name as a wrestler. He has yet to play a defensive snap for the Packers this season. He has over 100 snaps of special teams, but 0 defensive snaps for the Packers defense in 2025. Loveland, who is looking like a legit top 5 tight end already, and he could just start to drink this year, just like too easy. Comeback route, one-on-one in space. Like, this is the same stuff that the Patriots used to do with Gronk. And you've seen other offenses do it. But, hey, we get a one-on-one against a nothing burger kind of coverage guy. Sorry, Nick Neiman, but that's what you are. Loveland has a plus-plus advantage here. All right, we just split them out and take advantage. Like, the Gronk was slants and fades and everything. Loveland has a little bit of that too, but he's running a full route tree as a rookie. It's unbelievable what he is. And then the Zacchaeus touchdown was really nice design too. Just a great example of motion, Cole Kmet there. But I don't know. I've just rambled all these stats and stuff. It was just a really fun game. It's like, there's so much I want to talk about with it. So I'm trying to make it a fun listen here. But passes at 10 or more air yards. Caleb Williams, 48%. Jordan Love, 45.7%. League average is 33%. These guys were chucking it and in the wind, in the cold. And yeah, it was great stuff. But like you mentioned, Bears moving on to the next round and playing a fun game against the Rams, which is going to be another doozy. When Stafford and Caleb Williams played last year, it was a lot of fun. But you want to talk about the Packers? What do you think about all this LaFleur chatter? About this LaFleur, like, ooh, what's going on with this contract chatter? Because that's like one of those where I was like, I haven't thought about it, because I was like, I didn't think that was an actual possibility, but it's the Packers. But what do you think about it, Matt?
So I'm not like super stunned that it's come up, because there was talk about this at one point during the year when they were a little bit, you know, Matt Schneidman, who covers the team, you know, he tweeted at one point, like, Matt LaFleur might be coaching for his job. And, you know, they didn't give him a contract extension coming into the year. It's a new team president there in Green Bay. I think that's a big part of it. You know, for folks that aren't familiar, it's a very different operation there in Green Bay, because as everybody knows, they don't have like a singular team owner, so the team president has a lot of power. It's no longer Mark Murphy anymore running the team. It's a new person now. The name is slipping off the top of my head here. There was some talk this morning about how, oh, that person might have connections to Harbaugh and all this. Like, here's the deal. Like, I'm not surprised that it's become a talking point, and I do think that it gets tough with these teams like Green Bay that they just haven't made it to the top of the mountain. And I'm also one thing I think I'm annoyed at, Nate, is when we talk about a head coach and like how good they are. I think we, and I'm going to say we, because I definitely do this too, I'm not innocent of it, we immediately default to defending them by, well, look at what they do on their side of the ball. You know, like look at these efficiency stats for Matt LaFleur's offense. Like, okay, well, Matt LaFleur is not the offensive coach for the Green Bay Packers. He's the head coach of the team. I've gotten annoyed at this at times with D'Amico Ryans, and I think Ryans is a great coach, and they could beat the crap out of the Steelers tomorrow night, and I wouldn't be any surprised by it. But, you know, it's constantly kind of like, well, he's like almost left out of conversations about what's gone wrong with the offense. It's like, well, let's blame the coordinator, and obviously Nick Caserio runs the team, so he's got to get a ton of blame. But D'Amico Ryan's defense is awesome, so we don't talk about that. It's like, no, he's the head coach of the football team. Matt LaFleur is the head coach of the football team. The defense for Matt LaFleur, if you think he should be the head coach of the Green Bay Packers, which, by the way, I think is totally a defensible decision, the defense shouldn't begin and end with, well, the EPA for the offense is really good. Like, you got to have a better case than that. Like, so I'm not saying that I believe that LaFleur should be fired. That's just something I wanted to get off my chest, because that has started to annoy me in the past like year and a half.
No, I you're the head ball coach. That's what he would always say. Yeah, your name is next to the record. You know, like I think some of that, you chase points. Like, there's times that this offense is so aggressive. And again, I love it from a neutral sense, because my job's not on the line. You know, right. Again, it's these times where it's like, yeah, go for it. Yeah, third and one, play action, chuck it. And sometimes you do get the big play to Romeo Doubs or something of that sort. Sometimes you don't. And so, yeah, the EPA numbers, which I am victim of sometimes, going like, oh, look, but look at this. Look at what they're doing, all that. But there's also something to losing leads and maybe just but also there's something to hiring Jeff Hafley. I want to say, like, the Harbaugh is getting rumored for every job kind of thing. My inkling about the Packers, if it even did open up, which I don't think it should, but is that Harbaugh wants like an all-star assistant coaching staff, and Packers don't pay assistant coaches. So that's why it's usually like a lot of buddies. Like Mike McCarthy, if you looked at his old staffs, look at how many guys coached at some point or played at some point at Pitt, at the University of Pittsburgh. It was just that's kind of what the Packers are just so unique. Not only just their ownership system, but just how they do things, scouting wise, playing time wise. Look at their young players, how they pay people, how they just operate on a different timelines than everybody. They can do that. They have the luxury of doing that because they have no owner just going like bopping them on the nose all the time. So it's just, I don't think they should move on from LaFleur, because I'm like, this isn't just what everybody wants, is an offensive play caller who has shown that he's put together good offenses. I don't know. It's like, you feel like you're just taking a step back. Like, I think they also has a great chemistry with Jordan Love. I think Halfley's been really good as a defensive play caller. Mm-hmm. So to me, I was kind of like, all right, there's stuff that you have to fill in between the lines, but all systems go. They had so many injuries this year, and I know people are tired of it because they got the seventh seed again, and that again, that you can't just always blame that they have the youngest roster, but they do have the youngest roster. It's just a fact, and most times we use this as an excuse. I don't know. I could talk myself in circle about this, but I just don't think it's a thing that you move away from. I think it's something that you keep moving forward with.
I agree with you, by the way. And like I said, I think the defense for LaFleur goes beyond like, yeah, the offense is good and has good EPA and all that stuff. Yeah. I think the reality of this team is, I said this to you on the show, is the things I think we know show, or like, I know we know and I think we know. One of the things I knew was that the Bears offense is going to be fine. The passing game is going to be fine eventually. One of the things I said I think I know on that show was, I just think this is not the Packers' year. And that turned out to be true because of all of the key injuries. And by the way, that was, I think that was before Micah Parsons tore his freaking ACL, which the whole point of that was we're going to get Micah Parsons so that we're not the seventh seed that gets bounced in the first round of the playoffs. That's going to help us take us to another level. And maybe they still would have gotten bounced by the Bears in the first round of the playoffs, but maybe Caleb Williams doesn't, you know, complete one of the best throws you've ever seen of your life on fourth and eight if they have the guy that they got to close those games out. You know, that's a big part of this too. Tucker Kraft, I think, is their best offensive player. That injury's along the offensive line. I would just run it back next year, and hopefully some of those young guys take another step forward. Golden gave you some good flashes. Matthew Golden, nothing in the regular season. Great in the playoffs, just like he was at Texas last year to a little bit of a lesser degree. So there you go.
That's perfect. It really is. It is truly like a one-to-one kind of thing. I think just everything, the Tucker Kraft thing too, you could feel that in the red zone. I called it the golden window, but Jordan Love had a throw the second last play of the game for the Packers where it was Christian Watson. It was just like right here. And that I called it the golden window because it was the one throw that he could make that he could even possibly fathom, and he almost completed it. I tweeted it this morning, but it was just truly one of the almost kind of throws, and I get almost or only counting horseshoes and hand grenades, yada yada. I had enough replies that said that same exact joke a million times, but truly an unbelievable throw that could have been an all-timer. It could have been Steve Young throwing to Terrell Owens against the Packers defense, actually. But man, I call it the golden window because off of Dune, the golden path. It was the only path that would have worked was that throw right there. But you mentioned it. Caleb Williams had those moments too. And I just think these are, I don't know, two good offenses. Defense is battered. Packers defense pretty battered. Run it back. Parsons comes back. Tucker Kraft comes back. Who knows with Romeo Doubs? You know, he's a free agent. But man, I would bring him back, and man, just success of Christian Watson, all these guys, like this could be such a dangerous team, especially if they figure out the offensive line, which by the way, 93 combined dropbacks in this game, only 2 sacks. It was just insane. I always almost wish there was no wind so they could just keep chucking it. All right. But last game here. And again, the Bears play the winner of this game, which was the Rams, 34-31. The Rams are 3.5-point favorites at Chicago next week, but we're going to talk about Rams-Panthers, which was 10.5. And All Football 301 showed out with Jalen Coker and Colby Parkinson just getting after it in this game. I know Coker didn't make the All Football 301 team, but he's basically an honorary member. 9 catches, 134 yards, and a touchdown. And the Rams did, they got stuff, but they also just had some wonkiness happen. They had a punt blocked. Man, this team, special teams dooms this team. That would just be so brutal and so, so mean. But man, what'd you think about this game with your childhood favorite Panthers, I have to mention, in their first home playoff game in quite some time, which was actually a really fun atmosphere. That place sounded really loud.
Oh my God. Yeah, it was great. Listen, I don't care about the Panthers that way anymore, but it was pretty cool to see, like, there's been weirdness between Cam and the franchise, obviously, since that era ended. And him to be back there with the keep pounding drum, I think, that was cool to see. Banging the fans love Cam there. Oh, banging the hell out of that drum, baby. I think he wanted to break it. I think if you, I don't know if Cam would tell you the truth, but if you gave him a little, you know, truth serum, I think you'd tell you, yeah, I wanted to break that drum. Yeah, I really wanted to smack a hole through that thing. But the fans were juiced up. That building was really excited. And to me, I was like, oh my God, there were so many just, you can't make that mistake if you're the Panthers, you know, in this one, like Trevor Etienne fumbling muffing the punt. That's the type of thing you can't have that. Bryce, I think, throwing into the wrong window on the Coker interception. It's like, oh, you can't, you're going to get blown out if you make these mistakes. And they did not get blown out. They were completely respectable in this one, which was really cool to see. Honestly, I think this might've been the best game of the weekend, which is a shame that it was the first one, but it's kind of hard to top the ending of Bears Packers, but this was a really exhilarating game that, you know, I don't know that the Rams, see, this is the thing with the Rams, I think they do have real flaws. I think they're a team, which, like, no kidding, they're not the number one seed in the conference. It's just everybody loves the Rams. Everybody loves to talk about the Rams. Rams get a lot of pop in the old media here. Okay, people love the Rams. They got real flaws. They've got special teams issues. They got issues in the secondary, both of which were on display in this game. And they do have to have like a truly perfect offensive performance to beat better teams than Carolina. And they definitely didn't get a perfect offensive performance here, but that this was definitely a moment where late in it. I did love the quote that came out from Davante Adams, said that Matthew Stafford's like, let's go break these guys' hearts. And I mean, that was definitely a heartbreaking play to the Colby Parkinson touchdown late in the fourth quarter.
It definitely was. Yeah, that was definitely a dagger. Yeah, Stafford got another quarterback that got his finger affected. And it might have been Romo, to bring him back up, to actually name him by name. He mentioned this, and this is very true, and I think you saw it with Stafford, is that you don't feel it at first with the adrenaline, and then as the game, especially if you hit halftime, and then the adrenaline kind of wears off a little bit, and you have to get yourself amped back up. That's where you start to feel it. It throbs, especially if it's your pointer finger. And if you throw a football, this is my phone. I do have a football back here, so maybe I actually should use that. But if you throw a football, is that maybe I'm getting too inside this, but if you're throwing like a dart, it's finger down. I think a lot of people think it's like you throw like this, like almost underhand it, like a frisbee or something like that. But it's down, pointer down. So if that finger is affecting and you can't really grip that, I guess is a good way to put it, feel that pressure on your pointer finger, like that can really affect the football. And then you're going to get the wobble and you're going to get the sailed ball. So you're going to get all those types of things. Didn't really feel it too much with Allen, obviously. But with Stafford, he kind of did as the game went along.
Because
it was just like, you know, some more sailed balls, some sailed throws. But
the miss to Davante Adams, I think down the left sideline, that definitely felt like that was one that sailed on.
Oh my
him.
God, they force fed Davante Adams 13 targets, 5 catches, 70 yards. The second half, it was like they were just like, go to Davante. I haven't rewatched the game in all 22 yet, but I wanted to curious. That felt very force fed. Stafford had a 25.2 QB rating when he was targeting Davante Adams. I know that's an old stat, but when you see 25.2, it's kind of like, you know what you're getting there. it just really felt like the Panthers had a nice game plan where they're green dogging a lot, which is when a defender adds on. So the running back protects and then they add on with another guy, green dog. A dog is another term for a blitz or a linebacker pressure, if you want to know. And then green, as in like green light, green dog. It's an explanation. You might hear that term, but there's a little explainer for it. But I do think you mentioned it. So I want to bring up these receivers. Puka Nacua, 10 catches, 111 yards, 18 targets, touchdown. Had the one at the end of the half that he could have caught because he looked like he was trying to cut inside Davante Adams. But then the Panthers receivers, and I think this is the bugaboo for this Rams defense, is receivers with size. Coker is a monster. Tetro McMillan, monster. Coker, and I know this fascinates you a little bit. He's not just a big guy, like ha-ha type of player. He's not Skoranek or something like that. That was a joke, kind of a meme player for me. This dude's freaking good. Like this is a good combo these two have. And Coker, they're using him on the outside. And I was curious if you had any thoughts on that. Because in this game, he had 26 routes from the outside, 63% of his routes. This season, it was at 38%. This is next-gen stats. I know you have your own stuff. And then 233 yards and 2 touchdowns. But, I mean, in this game, super productive on the outside. 3 catches for 74 yards. Had a great touchdown catch and throw. Nice throw from Bryce Young, too, but also a great adjustment on that touchdown at the end of the game. But I was curious if you had any thoughts on Coker, like legitimately, because this is not a bit. Like, this guy's freaking good, and he kind of got showcased in this game.
Yeah, I mean, buckle up, people that are watching live, people that are listening the next day.
That's how we cap off the show, some Coker talk.
The producers. Yeah, I got about 30 minutes, actually, of things I want to say about Jalen Coker. So, no, but seriously.
Anticipation.
Yes. You can honestly, do you need to go to the bathroom, Nate? I can carry this for another 20 minutes here. Don't worry. If you got a chores to do over there. Yeah, whatever. No big deal. You come back when I'm done here. Coker is awesome, dude. He's a legit good player. And you brought this up about him playing on the outside. If you go back and look, subscribe to my website. I have a show. Subscribe to my website. Receptionperception.com, in case you're not familiar. His rookie year profile, the thing that was interesting about him is that, he was used as kind of like a big slot receiver. And you mentioned like he's a big guy. He's actually, I think, listed at certain places like 6'3", over 2 like 10. He's actually 6'1". He's got more of like Chris Godwin's build. So he was, from a size dimension standpoint, he looks a little bit like Chris Godwin. And Godwin obviously is like a power slot, and he was used as like a power slot receiver in his rookie season. But his best stuff to me from a reception perception standpoint was working against man coverage, which you typically think your slot receiver is going to be your slot and your Z is going to be the zone beater type. And for young receivers, sometimes these guys aren't always the best zone beaters because they're just not used to like settling in the right places and all that. And you've seen that with plenty of young receivers coming into the league, but he showed really well in isolated situations as a man coverage receiver. And look, I think Carolina, this happens. This is not, I'm not railing on the coaching staff for this. They really wanted their first round pick last year to work out in Xavier Leggett. So I think they had to do a lot of catering to like, okay, we got McMillan in here. We can stick him at X. How are we going to figure out how to make Leggett work? And it just didn't work. And it'd be one thing if we're sitting here and they're in the wild card round of the playoffs and they're still trying to make Leggett happen as that Z receiver, but they bailed on that idea. And Coker is the clear cut, you know, number two receiver here. I think there were times where, you know, they maybe went to Leggett a little bit too much in this game, like, and he only had four targets, but yeah. It's like, he's a guy that is a pure developmental player. Coker was much more ready to rock. And yeah, he's a guy that can win on the outside, and he's shown that all through. There's been every single game, really, towards the end of the year, he'd had at least one big play, if not just an outright badass touchdown, as an X receiver too, which allows them to move McMillan around. They didn't do a ton of that in this game. I think just 16% snaps in the slot for McMillan. But yeah, Coker really is an unlock to this offense. He is not just like a cute little player. Guy's a legit baller. And you could honestly see that during his rookie season. I think there's a reason they've kept him around, and there's a reason he's elevated to the point that he is now.
Yeah, it's that you mentioned it though, but it's like it opens up stuff for McMillan. There was actually the last two times I think these teams played, it was a fourth down touchdown Coker had, and he was an X, and it opened up McMillan though. That play was they ran a concept to pop open McMillan against man. And he was able to align in this bunch and get picked for, you know, because Coker is a valid threat as an X. Like, that's the thing. If all these guys, we talk about this with the Jags all the time, maybe this show more than most, but Jaguars skill position talk, but talk about like just how specific everybody has to be. And then now when you get guys like Myers and Parker Washington, now guys can kind of loosen up and you kind of get them in good spots. But today, like McMillan had a couple slant RPOs today, Saturday. Some slant RPO, it all blends together. I mean, starting Thursday night, it was college football, Saturday, Sunday. but it was, you saw like an end of half sequence where it was like an inbreaker to Tet, the PI, Bryce Young was able to scramble in the touchdown, but it makes them just more vertical or more explosive, even without just all just being like simple go balls. Yes, they get those, and that's what some of Bryce Young's best throws are, those go balls. But man, just turn those digs into big catch and runs. Like, I mean, this is huge. It just opens up so much. Like, again, I'm very optimistic about where these Panthers skill players are going. Bryce Young is getting the fifth year. They picked up his club option. I think they're maybe trying to get like a play like a special card in a card game, get that plus 10 XP boost, you know, like 10% boost, you know, on the game if they announce that announcement like right before he plays. Like, maybe that's what they're going for. But I thought he had a nice, solid game. Like, if he plays like this, you're a little more encouraged. The last drive wasn't very encouraging, but I did think he had a nice game. But any kind of capper, I guess, Panthers thoughts before we kind of wrap this up with the Rams?
Yeah, two more things real quick on Jalen Coker. Sorry, I did say I had 30 minutes.
Please do. Hold on.
98th percentile vertical jump, according to Mock Draftable, 85th percentile broad jump. Like, he's a legit athlete, too. He's not just some, again, little cutesy tryhard guy. So I really do think they have I'm with you. I think the skill position players are in a good spot
there.
Holy
Cross, he's also, people just think.
It's like, undrafted Holy
high
Cross.
Third down chain mover type. He's way more than that.
He is that, but he's more than that, which is really exciting. So just a great find by them, and great find by reception perception. Sorry, shout out to me. By the way, also for people, I've seen this too, like, oh, he's a free agent. He's an exclusive rights free agent, which means he ain't a free agent. You've seen any like aggregation of that, exclusive rights for agents is the biggest croc in the NFL. So he will be a Carolina Panther in 2026.
I did big research on that with Yash Nyman, who's actually on the Panthers because he was an EFA. And I was like, I did this whole thing like, because, oh, I wonder what tender they're going to make. It turned out nothing. He's like, nothing. Yeah. He's like an average backup. And it was just one of these things. No, EFAs never, this never happens anymore. I think like there was some back in the day, like in the aughts. I think like Steve Hutchison, like Nate Burleson, but that was like poison pills and all these crazy contracts mm-hmm. you could do in the old CBA. It's kind of, no one does it anymore. It's kind of like a gentleman's agreement kind of thing, actually, with some teams. Like, hey, don't screw this up for everybody. Yeah. Yeah. So,
yeah.
Anyway,
he's not afraid. But you mentioned Yash Nyman. That's actually with a good transition to the other thing I was going to say about Carolina. Ike Ekwonu, and we should have mentioned this too for the Bears, Ozzie Trapillo, patella tendon injury as well. And Ike Ekwonu had a serious knee injury here as well. A knee injury, I think it was, right? Had an injury here in this one. He's out for an extended period. And, you know, I think Carolina, that offensive line obviously has been a big turnaround for them. And that is an injury plagued unit this season and now is dealing with an injury going to this offseason. So that is an area where they're going to need to hammer in the offseason because that's a big part of their identity there. So I am optimistic about Carolina. I think they can feel pretty good about the direction that they're going, but that's something that they're going to have to address this year. And in addition to continuing to build on defense.
They got all their picks, pick 19, pick 51, and they got an extra fifth from the Vikings. I think that was the Thielen trade, who's now a Steeler.
Sick so trade.
See how that worked out for the Vikings. After his whole family complained about not being in Minnesota, and then they're in Pittsburgh. I don't know. I thought that was kind of funny. No, I do think that run game mention is important because that was the identity for the last year and a half. And then the last second half of the season, it kind of fell apart. O-line injuries, big part of that. Wasn't as explosive, but that's how this team wants this. I mean, a lot of teams want to do this, but especially this team as well. And that also is to dare teams to go into single high. Okay. We mentioned the McMillan be able to go on the outside and Coker going on the outside. So if we get 12, 21 personnel, whatever we want to do with two receivers, all right. And you're single high because you have to honor the run. Now we can take advantage of it with the one-on-ones. Use that Coker vert, use the Tetra McMillan ball skills, former volleyball player, all that stuff. Like that's the idea. And I can see the vision. So I'm curious of how they kind of address that. Like I said, they have all their picks. Kind of, this draft's so weird. It's not a very sexy draft. I'm just going to open them. There's some good receivers. That's a lie. There's some good receivers. There's a couple cool running backs. Yeah. So I'm lying. Kenny on Sadiq's cool. All right. But no, the Panthers did. The special team showed up in this game. We mentioned that it might be an Achilles heel for the Rams. It has been in some big games this season. Isaiah Simmons, thank you for making a cameo in this playoffs. Former interesting player in the draft. Just bounced around. But also the Rams. Let's just cap off with what they did well. I thought that Corbin Parkinson touchdown was awesome. There's that big play. They struggled on third down, which I thought was interesting. I thought Evero pitched a great game. The defense coordinator for the Panthers also got an interview, I believe, today. But on first and second down, the Rams had a 56% success rate. He had two interviews. Okay, nice.
Raiders, kinda, Falcons, yeah.
You got his name back up there. But they're 3-for-13 on third down, 23% conversion rate. Had some fourth down conversions. They had a great Puka Nacua touchdown in the red zone early. That was a fun design. Put him in the backfield, sold the choice route. That was sweet. But Rams thoughts. Anything else? Mentioned the kind of the maybe some DB woes. Inbreakers really get this team. That's something I've noticed, which is a little scary because the Bears have been ripping off some inbreakers. So, you know, that's something I'm kind of really keen. That's Ben Johnson's kind of favorite little thing. But any kind of closing thoughts on the Rams? But like who a month ago I was feeling great about. Now I'm just like every week kind of going, kind of squinting a little bit every week.
Yeah, I really do think it's a high wire act for this team. And like we'll see who obviously moves on from the San Francisco-Seattle game. But I'll tell you what, either of those two offenses, they like to throw over the middle of the field as well. And they have some pretty well, we'll see who's we'll see who's freaking healthy for the San Francisco 49ers if they meet with the NFC, meet in the NFC championship for the Rams. I don't even want to say the name Ricky Pearsall, but like he's a guy who could sting them on the outside. JSN could as well. And certainly the Bears are not short on pass catchers. So I do think if the Rams special teams for sure could be a big part of it, but if the Rams get taken out in this playoffs, I just imagine it's because the offense wasn't absolutely lights out perfect, and they weren't absolutely lights out perfect in this game, but it'll be because there's like it's a 85th percentile outcome for the offense, mm-hmm. and the defense will have just given up too many explosives on the other side.
That's really it. I think the passing, the Bears offense actually matches up well against this Rams defense. That's curious. But the Rams offense, which has been so good this year, and Dotson was hurt, I think, the guard for the Rams, that is, has to mention that. And I did think that the Panthers just had a great game plan. Dennis Allen's very funky on third and fourth down. Kind of see it sometimes. Sometimes they get popped and you don't get to see it that well, but he can dial up some good stuff. And that Green Dog stuff is very real. And Stafford didn't do well against pressure. He was 2 of 9 for 30 yards, one pick. He had a 1.4 passer rating against pressure. Like, he's old. Like, that's what you want to do against this team. And it's how you manipulate it. They got pretty good offensive line, Bears pass rushes and all that. Sweat had a good game. And Austin Booker is coming along still. Shout out, I mentioned it, Austin Booker. But all right, Matt, thank you for joining me. I'm fired up to talk more about the NFL with you. We'll be back. We're going to be back tomorrow night. We're closing out today, but we'll be back tomorrow night. We got another. They said, hey, get in here. Get in here. Monday Night Football. We'll be reacting to Texans Steelers live after the game. Get to work. I'm Nate Tice. You can find me at Nate_Tice on social media. I can say my name. It's 9:47 my time. It's what, 12:47 your time, Matt? God, thank you for joining me. Thank you for everyone joining out there. But Matt Harmon, _BYB, check out your article. Anything else you want to shout out? Anything else? Closing thoughts? Last sentences? Last rites?
Yeah, no, I'm excited to put that article out probably tomorrow afternoon because I'm actually hosting the live show for the fantasy podcast at 11 a.m. Eastern tomorrow. So a lot of talk about playoff. Thank God these games are good, bro, because I'm recapping them with you here late at night. I got to turn around and do it tomorrow morning with Scott Pienowski. So that's going to be a ton of fun. So people can check that out if they want to hear me say most of the same stuff, but maybe a little bit differently twice.
Just a little tint. Yeah, just to clean up the thoughts. I know I got some shows.
It's going to be a lot of. It's going to be a lot of Scott. What did you see? What did you see? Because I already said what I have to say. What did you see in these games? And let him tee off from there.
I'm parched. Yeah, I know. You're like, thank God these games are good, but it's like, is that a good thing? Because we just went 100 minutes, which is like the same time, same amount of time as WALL-E, which my son is obsessed with right now, which is fine by me. Great movie. But no, it was. Thanks for joining me, Matt. This was a lot of fun. I'm glad you guys, I'm glad you got the rough draft of your thoughts out. So you get to kind of hone in on them with Scott in that article tomorrow. But make sure to subscribe to us here at Football 301, wherever you get your pods. Follow us, rate us 5 stars, pretty please. Also watch us on YouTube like many of you are right now on the Yahoo Sports YouTube channel. So please like and subscribe there as well. And thank you again for joining us right after a nice long weekend of games. Again, we're going to be back live tomorrow night to react to Texans Steelers and all that good stuff there. Thanks to Stone, Austin Madison for everything they do, for staying up late with us, all the good stuff, for making us look and sound good. Thank you all for listening. Have a great day. See you guys next time.